KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, along with my co-host, Cynthia McClure. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Ursula, and hi to you, the listener.
It's going to be a sunny day today, and temperatures are going to go up above 70. And tomorrow, it's going to be sunny as well. And then on Wednesday, the first day of April, it's supposed to start raining right on cue. There will be a chance of thunderstorms on Wednesday, probably in the afternoon. But by Friday, the sun should return into a sunny weekend with highs in the low 60s. And also on the spring front, there's news. The Decorah Eagles have hatched two of their eggs. One hatched on Friday, and the second hatchling arrived yesterday at around 8 o'clock a.m. You can actually see it online. You can watch it hatch online.
And Earth Day is around the corner. Marlene Ehrsman with the Iowa Wildlife Center will be with us to talk about the All Species Parade being planned to honor Earth Day, along with Douglas Wood Wild Spirit Band concert on the weekend of April 25th and 26th. This event will be celebrating diversity in life around us and remind us of our connection to the natural world. For more information, go to www.iowawildlifecenter.org.
And Cynthia, this week you looked into two new tasting rooms for craft beers that opened up recently in the area. They both already have a following. You have an interview to share that you recorded with Andy McCormick, who recently opened Torrent Brewing in downtown Ames. And we'll have a visit from Elliot Thompson, former board member here at KHOY, who will tell us about Alluvial Brewing, which is located in Franklin Township, just northwest of Ames. He's been building and managing that brewery.
But first, KHOY reporter Greta Anderson brings us a story about mental health services. Budget changes on the state level making mental health care services more difficult to deliver. Greta brought two guests in to tell us about this.
Thanks, Cynthia. Well, the newspapers have published a lot of articles about Branstad's decision to close two of the state's four mental health institutions in Clarinda and Mount Pleasant, both in the south of Iowa. I know that the county offers services to those in our community with severe mental health challenges. So I called Deb Shildroth, director of Story County Community Services, to see how they expect these closures to affect them. And to clarify, mental health is just one area of services that Deb oversees as the director of Story County Community Services. What I learned from my conversation with Deb was that the elimination of a state funding stream might be the real issue for our county and the regional health care delivery system it is part of. So I invited Deb Shildroth, together with Kathy Johnson, Story County Community Health Services Coordinator, to give us this story. Both, by the way, have been serving our county in these positions for 15 years or more. Deb, Kathy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Deb, will you start us off and explain what is different about the budget Branstad proposed for the next fiscal year in terms of how it affects our county's mental health budget?
Thanks, Greta. Historically, the counties, and now we're in regions, and we'll get to that in a little bit, have received funds from the state to help support local services for individuals with mental health and other disabilities. And that funding stream is not included in the governor's budget this year. That funding stream is what we refer to as levy dollars from the state that would help support the services. And they're looking at using federal dollars that they receive in lieu of those state dollars. And then they want to change the formula so that those dollars are directed towards the regions that need it most. And it just comes at an inopportune time because we just started regionalization last July. And so the regions and the counties are trying to get on board and get the wheels under them to provide services and develop new services, which was part of the redesign legislation 3 years ago. So it's just one of those things where we are trying to lift this new system off the ground. And then when our funding situation is uncertain, that causes everybody to kind of stop and relook at how things will be moving forward.
So are those federal dollars guaranteed, or is there going to have to be some kind of, you know, bar that we have to jump over?
Those dollars, there's two pots of them, and they have been historically coming to the state for as long as I've been around. One source of the funds is called Social Services Block Grant Dollars, and we've been receiving those dollars now for many years, and that's primarily based on population and expenditures. The other pot of federal dollars that they are looking at are called Community Mental Health Block Grant Dollars, and those dollars have historically come from the feds to the Department of Human Services and then on to our community mental health centers. And so what they're looking at doing is, instead of channeling those dollars directly to the community mental health centers, they're going to send them to the regions that need the dollars most. So we could have community mental health centers throughout the state who don't get those dollars. And they rely on those dollars, of course, to support the services that they have been providing. And so we're very concerned that the loss of dollars to those agencies will cause changes in the way they're delivering services. And those agencies might end up coming to the region anyway, asking to backfill those funds. So it just really changes kind of the scheme of how services have been delivered.
Let's talk about the regionalization that occurred. Mental health services throughout the state were rearranged in the year 2013 from a county-based structure to an 8-region approach throughout the state. Can you tell us how this restructure affected Story County and, as far as you know, our neighboring counties?
Sure. And actually, we have 15 regions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
I got that.
Yep. The legislation was passed in 2012 requiring counties to regionalize, and we could self-select. And Story County is part of Central Iowa Community Services region, and that's 10 counties. And those counties include Franklin, Hamilton, Hardin, Boone, Story, Marshall, Poweshiek, Jasper, Warren, and Madison. So we kind of go north and then make this little circle around Polk and Dallas counties. And total population is about 320,000 within that region. And what that region we're responsible for is creating and funding services to individuals with mental illness and intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. The region is governed by its own governing board. We're structured through what's called a 28E agreement. So each county has a board of supervisor member sitting on this governing board. So we have a 20-member board. Plus, we have two ex officio members that represent consumers and families and providers. And so that board meets every month. We meet the fourth Monday at 1 p.m. over at the Story County Administration Building. Those are open public meetings. I mean, we post the agenda, so people are welcome to come to those meetings and hear what's going on. The other thing that the region is doing is we're pooling all of our funds. So any local property tax dollars that we're levying and any state money that we may receive, we're pooling it all together with our fiscal agent, which is Madison County. So the Madison County Auditor is the individual that we're working with to help track those funds and help us with our budget. We have a budget that is serving the entire region for fiscal year 16, which will start on July 1st. The budget is proposed to be about $15 million. And there's a number of funds that we have set aside that will go towards creating new services. Our region, fortunately, is financially healthy. So if we do not receive any state dollars in fiscal year 16, we can manage on what our fund balance is and what our local levy dollars are. But if we go much farther out than fiscal year 17 or 18, and that's with all regions, then those regions start having difficulties. And so we are interested in finding a longer-term funding solution for the new system that's been developed.
Just quickly, was the regionalization of healthcare, mental health care, was that intended to save money? Was it intended to eliminate disparities between counties? Why was it done?
Yeah, very good questions. All of the above. It was to help create an equal playing field throughout the state so that wherever a person lives, they should be able to access the same set of services. So whether they live in our region or they move down to Southeast Iowa and live in that region, there's what we call core services that regions have to provide and fund. And then anything above those core services, we call those core plus services. Examples of core services would be inpatient hospitalization, outpatient services, residential services, employment kinds of services. Core Plus services would involve mental health courts, jail diversion. We're looking at like mobile crisis, those kinds of things. And the core services are the services that are probably take the bulk of the funds because they have to be created and developed. And a lot of times when you're talking with those agencies to create and develop those services, they need startup funds to do so. So that's where we're seeing, you know, a bulk of our dollars needing to be set aside is to help with the development of those services. The system was created to provide some efficiencies. So instead of, for example, every county paying bills that come into their offices, we'll have our fiscal agent through Madison County do that to create some efficiencies as well.
Thank you, Deb. We're talking with Deb Sheldroth and Kathy Johnson now about mental health care in Story County and how it might be changing with this new upcoming fiscal year. Kathy Johnson, you are a mental health services coordinator in Story County. Can you give us a picture of what your days look like? What kind of work do you do in the field?
Well, within our region, as Deb described, every county still has service coordination services. So myself and Nikki Lawman are the service coordinators here for Story. Basically, Greta, we're kind of the access point, maybe that first face for people. So if someone feels they're in need of mental health services, or more likely my calls or my contacts are people who have family members or friends who they feel need mental health services. So they can call our office, they can stop in our office and talk about what that might look like, what they might need, what's available. There's a process, an eligibility process that people need to go through that starts with an application. And so a lot of my day is having those kind of contacts with people. I know that you got to us through Vic at the homeless shelter. We serve people in all kinds of situations. Some of them come from stable homes and some of them come from the homeless shelter. And those people are a particular challenge because of their transient backgrounds. Many of them have not applied for health insurance. They don't know what services are out there. They need meds. They need emergency services. So we get involved in providing those kind of things as well.
So how has the demands of your job changed over the years as funding levels and structures have changed? You've been at this since the year 2000, right?
Yes. Yes. I don't know that it's really changed a lot because the needs are the needs and they're there. And I think in Story County, we have always strived to and done a marvelous job of meeting those needs. I think it's just becoming aware that there's some time constraints and that go on that make it frustrating and difficult. Sometimes people get frustrated with, this is going to take more than a day for me to get the service that I need, and that gets frustrating for us as well. But I think that we're doing a good job. The regionalization, it's changes for us. It's some changes kind of in procedure. We're trying to learn that and get our feet on the ground with that. But I think it's moving along, and I'm really hopeful that it'll mean maybe some new services for people that we haven't had before.
You hear a lot about waiting lists for all kinds of services these days. Is that a problem that you find in the mental health services field?
Well, it is, but not exactly for us, for county services. We don't have a waiting list right now. I think the challenge right now, you mentioned earlier, the closing of the MHIs.
Mental health institutes.
The mental health institutes. Locally, we have certainly seen a problem with that. People end up in Mary Greeley on the behavioral health unit. They need more intense, longer-term mental health. That really an MHI is the place to do that. And so sometimes that means people sitting and waiting for beds. That's a frustration that we all have. Yeah. And that's a fear. We don't really know. We're reassured that that will be taken care of, but we're not sure that it will be.
What do you mean?
Well, that they're going to be replacing the beds that they're closing. There'll be other community alternatives. I don't really know what those might be at this point in time. So that's a concern that I have because that really directly has influenced us at the county level and the folks that we work with. We have people sometimes sitting waiting for beds at a mental health institute.
And I know also that the adolescents there's a similar situation with adolescents. I'm not sure if they're part of your clientele, but you know, they closed the mental health institute or the girls' home in Toledo. Mm-hmm. So,
So if somebody does need mental health services for themselves or their family, what is really the process? What are the steps that somebody should take?
Calling our office. They can definitely call community services. We can take them through that process. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just talking to people to see what exactly is the nature of the service that they need. The Affordable Care Act has been a wonderful addition for people. A lot of people that had to get county funding before now are eligible for what's called the Iowa Wellness Plan, which is the Medicaid alternative here mm-hmm. for the state of Iowa. With that, they can access those basic outpatient mental health services. Sometimes they don't really even know how to do that. We run into people all the time that haven't because maybe of the instability in their lives. So we can direct them to Department of Human Services where they need to get on that kind of insurance, or we can provide that stopgap until people do get on that.
Mm-hmm. So when you say call our office, tell us again again what the office is.
It's the Central Iowa Community Services, the Story County office, and our number here is 515-663-2930. 515-663-2930.
And you probably have a website that people could also go to. You say that?
Yeah. We can direct them directly to the Story County website. It's storycountyiowa.gov, and then click on Community Services, and it will talk about Central Iowa Community Services and the process to access services. The other thing, too, I can't emphasize enough the role that Kathy plays in the system, because it is so important to have a local person that people can call, contact, and not only clients but agencies, and find out what services are available and to know what's available not only within the county but within our region. So that local piece is so important, even within the regionalization structure. That's one thing our governing board is really excited about and wants to keep in place, because people need to talk to someone. And so we want to keep that in place.
A lot of times dealing with mental health is often a situation of crises. You know, you get the phone call when there is a crisis, not so much maybe when there is need for preventative treatment and so forth. How do you move people into the preventative treatment world instead of, you know, being that stopgap when there's a crisis?
Well, I think dealing with the crisis first is oftentimes what we have to do and get people stable. I think word of mouth and people realizing that there are those preventative kinds of services that can help people to stay stable, give them the support that they need. And a lot of that is, like I said, word of mouth, you know, getting people to realize, make that phone call, find out what's there. A lot of the calls I get are friends of friends of friends, you know, or I have a neighbor whose son is in this service and it looks like maybe something somebody in my family could use. So mental health, I think, slowly is becoming something that people are more willing to talk about and understand. I don't think I know a family that's not affected in some way by mental health issues. So I think people are beginning to see this isn't something to be ashamed of. It's something that we need, and having even the smallest piece of support can sometimes make a huge difference in people getting on with their lives, and especially young people. In this community, we have a lot of college students. We have a lot of wonderful services in our schools and our high schools. So we get a lot of referrals from schools, youth transitioning in, and a lot of those, maybe they've had mental health services as a youth and now they're questioning, now what's going to happen? And so we can be a part of that too, and helping them look at what kind of support services are needed as they transition into adulthood.
Well, we certainly don't want to see a decrease in any of those services at the county level. Wrapping up then, Deb, could you add a last word on the subject of mental health services in the county?
Certainly. Mental health and disability services have been through many changes in the last 2 to 3 years, and we're looking at more changes with the Department of Human Services RFP that's been released for Medicaid services, which would encompass medical in nursing services and, I mean, just the whole array of Medicaid services. So more changes on the way, and I think we just have to be positioned to help our clients understand what these changes mean, help our providers understand what it means to survive in a managed care environment. I know one of the things we talked about earlier was talking to local legislators about how these changes impact us. And we have a great bunch of local legislators that understand the issues and are easy to talk to and approachable about these things. So we do have that channel of communication going with them so that they can represent us the best that they can down at the State House.
Okay. Well, thank you, Deb Shildroth, Director of Story County Community Services, and Kathy Johnson, the Community Mental Health Services Coordinator of the county.
Thank you, Greta.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We have just been listening to a discussion about how changes in the state fund stream for mental health services impacts county and regional health care delivery. KHOI reporter Greta Anderson spoke with Deb Shildroth, Director of Story County Community Services, and Kathy Johnson, County Mental Health Services Coordinator. I am one of your hosts, Cynthia McClure, and together with Ursula Rutenberg.
Marlene Ayersman from the Iowa Wildlife Center has joined us to talk about the All Species Parade being planned to honor Earth Day along with the Douglas Wood Wild Spirit Band Concert. These events are planned for the weekend of April 25th and 26th. So welcome, Marlene. It's good
Hi,
to have you back
you.
In the
good
studios.
Morning.
We spoke with somebody briefly on Friday, I think, about this event. And I think you were on the Donna Lana show, too.
That's right.
Talking about this event. So have there been developments? Are the plans coming along?
Well, we know the parade route has been approved, and so that's moving along. And we haven't confirmed some other events that are going to be taking place, but there are several that certainly are, including the Douglas Wood Wild Spirit Band and now the parade route here downtown Ames. And some of the exhibitors are coming forward now to be part of this, and so it's starting to come together really quickly now.
So what is an All Species Day parade?
Oh, the All Species One Earth event is just a celebration of spring and biodiversity. So the All Species Parade is simply that. People come as any species that they want to honor for the day, and they can come as a wild species, like a barred owl. That's what I'm going to be coming as. And you can come as your favorite wild plant, like a big blue stem. You can represent a river with the fish in the river. You can represent a turtle. You can represent a domestic animal, like a dog or a cat, if that happens to be one of your favorite species. But we're just trying to get people to realize that we're one species on this planet, and we need to share this planet with the myriad of other species.
So is this a parade where everybody walks down the street in one direction?
Yes. I believe that's how it's going to play out, Ursula. This is our first time, so it'll be a trial run. But the other all-species parades around the country that have been going on for 20 or 30 years, typically they just march in one direction, and it's a procession. We have fun, but it's also a time to, like I said, honor those other species. So
this is something that other people have done.
Yes, yes.
Tell us a little bit about this tradition.
You know, I don't know exactly where it started. I know that it seems like it might have started on the East Coast and spread westward. And of course, California has several. Well, there's one in Minnesota. There's one in Oregon. I mean, if you start looking at it, there are several. And I just thought it was time that we bring something like this to Iowa, because Iowa really does still have richness in biodiversity. We just sometimes have to look for it a little bit harder.
Well, speaking of which, yesterday afternoon I went for a spring walk at Peterson's Pit with another KHOI reporter, Gail Seiler, and there was a barred owl sitting on the fence watching
us. Oh, that's great. They're really nesting right now, so it was probably watching its territory, right?
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So let's be clear. Is this parade a parade of people dressed like animals, or is this a parade of people bringing their animals?
Oh, good point. No live animals in this parade. Planners decided it could be pretty stressful in many situations for animals, and we're going to have probably a band of some kind just to add to the festive atmosphere. But so no live animals, no motorized vehicles.
But music.
Yeah, people can certainly celebrate with music, and we'll be arranging that part. So, and any age is welcome. So if you want to bring your infant that you're carrying dressed in a crocheted turtle costume, it's wonderful. It's going to be for all ages.
And the parade route?
Parade route will gather in front of the Elks Lodge. We've actually have that reserved so people can come and change into costume there.
Which is 5th Street
which is
and
5th
Douglas.
And Douglas, right? Mm-hmm. Right across from the Ames Public Library. And our staging area will be the 5th and Douglas, 6th and Douglas area. That whole street will be staged for departure, and we'll gather at 1, depart at 2 o'clock, and march then west on 5th Street, up 2 blocks, and then north to 6th Street, and then back to the library. So it's a circular route and should be pretty easy and not too long for some of the smaller munchkins. So.
And there's going to be a band?
Yes. After the parade, then, we figure we might end about 3 o'clock. And then after the parade, people can go into the exhibit hall. Exhibits will open at 2:30 in the Ames Public Library auditorium and last until 5 o'clock. And there'll be educational exhibits on many, many aspects of how we can care for, respect other animals and care for the planet. And then 7 o'clock that evening will be the Douglas Wood Wild Spirit Band performing at the Ames Public Library auditorium.
Can you tell us a little bit about who they are, what kind of music they'll be?
Oh, Douglas Wood is an acclaimed author, singer, songwriter, and children's author, and he's just pretty remarkable, and he's also a wilderness canoe leader, and he's got a lot of experience out there. And so his group will sing a lot about our relationship with the wild, but they launch into bluegrass too, because they're just excellent musicians. So it'll be a little rock and a little bit of bluegrass and a lot about the environmental ethics that we should all start forming in our lives.
Okay, so it's a first annual.
The first annual, you bet. Yeah. So we hope everyone comes out and participates in some way. And you can sponsor this if you want to as well.
So who is participating so far? Can you tell us a little bit about?
We don't know the numbers yet. We've got a group of Ames High School students that have been thinking. We have groups of Iowa State University students that have been thinking. Organizations can carry a banner if they would like and represent their organization dressed as whatever they want. So we don't have numbers yet because it's so early in the registration stages. People can go to the Ames Public Library website and register. And you don't have to register to be present, but to participate, but we'd like to get some numbers. We kind of want to get an idea how many are going to be coming. So we don't know that exactly yet.
So you can literally join the parade on the spot if you really want to.
You can. We'll probably have some extra costumes and masks available, but not very many. So we hope people use their creativity, their little artistic bent, and bring their own.
Are you planning to be in the parade?
Oh, yes.
I'll be the barred owl.
The spirit owl. Yes, yes. It's a costume I actually developed for Story County Conservation Halloween hike decades ago. And so, yes, I will have my own costume. So, and our partners will probably be there in some kind of, whether they have simply ears on, I don't know. But so Story County Conservation Board, Ames Public Library is a major partner. Ames Park and Recreation is another major partner. So we've had a lot of fun planning this.
Well, very nice. Could you just summarize again what exactly the event is, when it's going to happen? and how to get involved.
Sure. The event is the All Species One Earth event, and it will be April 25th, beginning at 1 o'clock, gathering to get yourselves ready for the parade. The parade will start at 2 o'clock. The educational exhibits open at 2:30 at the Ames Public Library and end at 5. And then the Douglas Wood and the Wild Spirit Band begins at 7 o'clock that evening, Saturday evening.
So it's the All Species Parade, and which is basically dress up like an animal. Don't bring your animal, but dress up like an animal and represent.
Or a plant or an insect.
Can it be a rock?
Absolutely, why not? I mean, you know, that's not necessarily a species, but it is part of the geological past. So, you know, we can represent many things. Okay. Represent a habitat, if you would like.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens, and maybe this will be a tradition that will grow over the years into a very spectacular event.
We hope so. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming in.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. During the past week, I looked at two local brewing companies that have just opened for business. Torrent Brewing Company now is officially open, located at 504 Burnett Avenue near 5th Street in downtown Ames. It offers 6 beers brewed on site, 2 guest beers, a cider, and a root beer for the kids. Andy McCormick is the founder of the new brewery. He has been making beer ever since he started his first batch on the stovetop. He is a busy man these days and was able to take a break and give me a few minutes for an interview. So here's that clip.
This is Cynthia McClure. I am at Torrent Brewing Company with the owner, Andy McCormick, and one of his daughters. You just opened up.
I think we're into our fifth week, weekend right now, currently.
So you opened up 5 weeks ago. Has it reached your expectations over here at Torrent Brewing Company here in downtown Ames?
Yeah, you know, as for expectations, you know, it's been very good. You know, we really didn't know what to really expect. You know, we got flooded with local community coming in, which is great. We still have great crowds. You know, it's a very good turnout that we're receiving, and it's really made us happy.
And this is family friendly because you have children.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a family friendly place. You can bring in your kids and order in food, or you know, in the next week or two, we're hoping to have some food vendors come in. But yeah, you can bring children in with a parent or guardian, sit at a table, you know, have a conversation, you know, family time. You know, watch something on one of the, you know, few TVs that we have. We have a root beer for the kids that we make here in-house.
And your name is?
Ava.
So what do you think about this? How has this affected you?
I like making root beer. I like the popcorn here.
This is just nice. Nice to be able to spend time with family and meet new people.
Yeah.
How old are you, Ava?
I'm 7 years old.
So what do you think about your dad making beer?
I do think it's a good thing, and sometimes I watch him clean out some kegs.
Andy, what would you say are your signature beers here at Torrent Brewing Company in downtown Ames?
You know, I would say our most sought-after beers have been our IPA, our double IPA, and our American Brown. You know, and also our Milk Stout is really popular with everyone so far. I could tell that because those are the ones that we're constantly having to make and chase our tail, you know, trying to keep the taps full. And, you know, with keeping the taps full, that's a unique thing about Torrent Brewing Company is we're so small that, you know, something may run out, but we try to move something new on in its place. So we try to keep some variety. Obviously, the beer is as fresh as possible because we're so small, we have to rotate through and, you know, keep brewing, keep chasing our tail.
How big are these brewing vats that you have?
Our brew house is a 3-barrel system. And so what that equates to is every time we brew, we make the equivalent of 6 kegs of beer. So you can just imagine, you know, supplying a tap room, 6 kegs is a small, minute, you know, amount of beer. overall in the big scheme of things. Our focus is the tap room. If we can supply and keep the taps running, that's our goal. You know, we're not distributing right now. You know, we've had requests from local businesses, both in Ames and outside of Ames. And currently, just right now, we can't do any distribution. We will be, though, shortly, within the next week or two, I expect to be doing some limited growler sales for take-home consumption.
So this is a destination spot. You have created a destination spot here in Central Ames for people looking for a new experience.
Yeah, you know, that was really the goal, is people from the local community and from other communities, if they're coming through Ames, we really wanted to make it a destination spot, as you say, where they knew if they come, they should swing into Torrent and have a beer and try it out, you know, and see what, you know, what we have different to offer.
And for designated drivers, which I highly recommend, have a plan. They do have root beer, and drink responsibly, you know, because nobody needs to have a misdirected event happen. So, Ava, do you hope to learn how to brew beer in the future?
Yes, I do.
How many children do you have?
I have 3 children. I have 2 7-year-old girls, Ava and Ella, and then I have a soon-to-be 4-year-old son, Carter. And then, those 3 guys help out quite a bit, you know, primarily on the root beer sampling side of things. And then my father-in-law, Mike Braylon, helps out tremendously. He's right by my side through thick and thin, you know, the whole time, at night, in the morning, whatever we need to do. And then my wife, Angie McCormick, is also part of Mick and I's rock, keeping things organized, making sure that the tap room needs what it needs, and, you know, also helping to manage the kids, you know, throughout the day. So, yeah, with the 3 of us, we're making a go at it and having fun trying.
What do you hope to have in the future with this? Because you're a young family and you have support from your family. So what do you hope to see Torrent in the future?
Like we talked earlier about a destination brewery, I really want to be able to produce, first of all, a core lineup of beers that people know are usually always on tap. But I want to start venturing out and doing some experimental thing. Like right now we're in our barrel room and we're surrounded by Cedar Ridge bourbon barrels. And so we're really, really chomping at the bit, eagerly looking forward to filling those and seeing what kind of crazy concoctions we can come from those.
So this is, you know, I know this sounds really amazing, but you guys are really just a small artisanal operation that really wants to bring some new flavors that you can't get on the open market. So you got to come here to get them.
Absolutely. What I'd like to do is create flavors of beers and different styles that, you know, we do just a little bit different and make us unique. And, you know, hopefully we continue to gain a following, you know, and grow from that and, you know, make people, you know, stop by Torrent and have a pint.
Well, I know that Ames Brewing Link shows up here. And when do they show up? And how long have you guys been collaborating with them?
I have been a member of the Ames Brewers League for probably 6 years now. They actually meet the second Tuesday of every month here at 7 p.m. in our tap room. The group comes in, brings beer samples, talks beers, answers local homebrewers questions, and then you know, they're I know that they've got some special events planned in the near future.
I am at Torrent Brewing Company with the owner, Andy McCormick, and thank you, Andy, and I appreciate all your time. And one of his daughters, Ava. Thank you, Ava, for this interview.
Thanks, Cynthia. Thank you very much.
That was Andy McCormick, owner of Torrent Brewery, which just opened up in downtown Ames on Burnett Street. Northwest of town on Burnett Avenue, I guess. Burnett Avenue.
Yeah.
Northwest of town on West 190th Street, another local brewing company opened on March 20th, Alluvial Brewing Company.
Alluvial Brewing Company is being built on a unique philosophy based in having a long-term impact on creating community, as well as fostering creativity. Elliot Thompson built it on a free-range tap room to encourage socialization and creativity. The brewery is on an 80-acre organic farm that he also manages. Welcome, Elliot.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I got to talk with Elliot a few days ago, last Friday. I brought my husband in for a tasting, and he really likes the brewery, let me tell you.
Good.
But you talked about your philosophy, and I just wanted to bring you in and share that with the community because you have a unique kind of situation. You're on the northwestern part of Ames, growing part of Ames, but it's also your presence there. You know, you're thinking long term, and the creative process is just unique. So if you want to share that with our listeners.
Well, Elliot, why don't you first tell us a little bit who the brewing company is, who's making the company?
Yeah, so this is It's between three individuals. Myself, I'm the owner. And then we have two brewers, Matt Nissen and Jason Peterson. They're the two head brewers. So we've been working on it. I started the process about a year ago, and they've been brewing every day since the middle of January. So we've been open 2 weeks now, so finally getting going on getting in a groove and stuff. So that's good.
It's a unique situation you have. So, you know, the whole you applied for the permits.
Yep.
A year ago, and then it just recently happened, and
yeah, it's been a slow process, but yeah, it feels good to get going. And
so, tell us your philosophy behind the.
Well, I was telling Cynthia. I mean, most importantly, we want to make the best product we possibly can. So that's like, you know, that's the number one thing, and I feel like we will be able to do that. And so that, yeah, obviously that's number one, but then. You know, assuming that we can do that and knowing that we can do that, we want to kind of push, this community out there that I think, well, there's Prairie Moon Winery, which is next door, and they've been there for quite a long time, and they have quite a following. And then, yeah, I've been farming the 80 acres for the last couple of years, and we're doing a lot of stuff with that. We're seeding a lot of native prairie grasses. We're trying to restore wetland, and that's going to be about 6 to 7 acres. And then the native prairie that I've put in is about a half acre, and we're going to keep expanding that a little bit. And
so when people go out to taste at your tasting room and have that experience, you're creating this whole native environment.
Yeah, so that's like
you're reclaiming
it. In the press release and when I've been talking about it a little bit, we're calling it a free range brewery because that's kind of the idea that we want. We want people to come out, bike out, drive out, however you're going to get out there.
But safely then once you, and have a designated driver,
yeah,
highly recommended.
Yeah. And then once you get out there, I feel like the brewery is a hub for all these other projects that we want to do. And I feel like we're kind of in a unique spot because we have a little bit of land to share. And it's been amazing just seeing the transition the last couple of years. We have a lady, Julia Slocum, who runs Lacewing Acres, where she's renting 3 acres from us, so she's going to move her CSA operation out there. So she had been doing it over in Boone County, and now she's over there. And yesterday morning, she texted me and said there was two bald eagles down on the pond, and mm-hmm. I've been seeing those quite a bit lately out there. And
you've been creating a wetland out there.
Yeah,
correct?
Yeah, and it's just amazing to see all these birds and ducks and where they're coming from. And yeah, there was two bald eagles yesterday, and you can see it from the patio. And
so you're going to be creating these new flavors and beers. People can go out and sit on your patio and watch this this scene develop.
Yeah, and I mean,
reclaiming.
Hopefully, especially for I was talking to someone last Sunday. We want it to really be for everyone, not just 21 and older. But there was some families out there last Sunday, and I was kind of explaining to them what I wanted to have happen out here with the prairie and the wetland and everything, because I think it'd be a great experience for kids that come out there. I mean, if you have a family and you come out there, and if you like beer but your kids want to walk around the prairie, you can buy a beer and then go, you know, check out the bald eagles or whatever. But that's kind of long term. I mean, it's going to take me a long time to do that, but
that's the big picture.
Yeah, I feel like the brewery is going to be kind of the hub for that. I mean, it's been mm-hmm. amazing to see what it's done in 2 weeks. And I think it's in a great spot for a bike trip. We're really going to try to push to get some paved shoulders on George Washington Carver, but it's a great bike ride out from town. It's about a half an hour from here, really.
Okay. So big picture, you're making it a kind of a destination in as far as family and environment. You know,
yeah, and I feel like the tap room is, you know, it's almost like a wine tasting room. I mean, there's no TVs in there. It's not that big of a room. I mean, we have seating for 40 in there, and then the back room holds another 10. But it's not the biggest room. So I feel like the outside experience and interaction is a big part of it. So.
Okay. Let's
you mentioned other projects. You mentioned the wetland and the prairie. Are there any other projects that you were referring to?
Well, we've been talking with some friends of ours who do some art installations, and Nick Holstrom, a friend of ours, is going to be putting up a structure here in the next month or so. It's something he's been working on for a long time. It's just going to be a shelter for eight people, and it's really amazing looking. It looks like a bird, and he put some LED lights in it and stuff, and it kind of looks down towards the pond. So that's going to be like the first thing that we do, and then we're also I really want to start working on a music stage, and a couple people have mentioned helping me with that. So, you know, the installation that should be done in the next month or two, and then we'll start kind of just piece by piece. I mean, it's going to take a while, but yeah, long term, that's what we want to do.
But people will show up for the tasting room, and you want to talk about the beer that you make there.
Yeah, so we have 10 taps. Right now we have eight of our beers, and then we serve two of them on Nitro. So we'll always try to have 10. We've had a guest tap from Boone Valley Brewing that will kind of rotate in and out. But, yeah, right now we have 10. And we're going to see how the summer goes, see if we can match our production of the tasting room. We really want people to come out there to experience it. But at some point, you have to make decisions for expansion. So I think initially we're going to see what we can do out there, but then move into town a little bit to some restaurants and some bars. No immediate plans to do any bottling or canning or anything, but we definitely want to add that on, probably in the fall or the winter.
So your recipes, what kind of – you talked about an egalitarian approach to creating the recipes and people can contribute.
Yeah, I mean it's to see how the two brewers interact with each other is pretty fun and interesting. One of them – I mean, they've both done beer for a really long time. One of them is really rooted in, like, your traditional, like, the classics. I mean, he knows, all these recipes from when we first started brewing. And then the other one is really kind of hip to the newer styles and a lot of the newer hop varieties and all this stuff. So to kind of see them work together, it's pretty fun. And we've also, I mentioned this the other day, we wanted to hopefully do like a rotating guest brewer tap. So if we have nine of our own, and then right now, we have a guest tap of Boone Valley, but we want to invite some people in who, from the community who want to share a recipe and make a batch. So we've already had quite a few people, ask us about it. So I don't know. I feel like I saw that in a brewery sometime before, and, I don't know. I feel like it's a good way to get people
for
involved.
Brewers. It's
I mean, there's so many people that brew now, so it's
kind of a high risk approach to.
Yeah, no, I mean it's definitely it's definitely risky, and if I had a recipe, I don't brew, but if I had one and I submitted it, we're not going to let myself do it. But if someone makes a really good beer and they believe in it and stuff, we want to
give them an opportunity to share that.
It, yeah, in our system, we have a couple smaller. Fermentation tank, so we can do some test batches like that. So it's not, we're not making 1,000 gallons of beer like that. It's a smaller scale, but yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to share with the listening audience about Alluvial Brewing Company in Northwestern Ames?
I just think it's not necessarily about our company, but I just think it's great that there's three breweries in Ames now, and I feel like it's one of those things sometimes if you're in the same business together, like you can be competitors or whatever, but I feel like this whole brewing culture and the beer culture, like you kind of foster off each other. So, the other day, Torrent had sent some people out to us and they came all the way out there to have our beers, and we've kind of referred them to Torrent and Old Main as well. And so I feel like, the more that you add, it builds a stronger culture. I mean, a place like Fort Collins has like 27 breweries, and it's I don't know how big it is, 250,000 or something. But everyone you add, more people like get exposed to it and stuff. So I feel like it's just nice to have kind of that growing community in Ames, and I feel like we're all gonna build off each other. So
it builds people together.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the whole culture behind this beer movement and everything. It's just. It's a community place, and people like to hang out with people and have a beer and, bike out there, this huge bike culture around beer. And I don't know, I feel like between us three, and yeah, it's going to be great. See what happens.
So in this process, this year-long process, is this for the faint of heart, creating a new brewery?
I mean, it's if you don't mind paperwork, I somehow it doesn't bother me too much. But it's a lot to take in, especially if you've never done it before.
You like doing it?
I do. Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, I really, really like customer service, and I work in the tap room every day, and that's been really fun to just finally get going on that. So I've just been, you know, drowning myself in paperwork and to finally kind of step out of that and interact with people. And it's amazing to talk about your product. I mean, if people come out there and you ask them what they thought of the beer, it starts a good conversation. So,
question. Are you going to be making any soft drinks for the kids or non-drinkers?
Yeah, we have to figure out a few things with that first. I love ginger beer, so I want to have ginger beer. But we also, I mean, kids like root beer too. So we definitely want to do that. But with our current tap setup, we're not going to be able to serve them in there. So we're going to have to figure out a different way to serve them, just through some kegs from the cooler or something. So, yeah.
So can you describe to us any particular moment along this process where you really felt that this was why you were doing it?
I feel like, opening night was, I mean, that was like where it was at, you know, because you're all nervous and excited and you don't know what you're getting into. But then, I mean, our whole staff, like it took us about an hour or two, and then it felt like we've been doing it for years. I mean, it's just a really quick transition from paperwork and the nervous excitement you get to finally doing it and just kind of getting in a groove. And that's what I'm looking forward to most, is just settling in, making beer, serving beer, and working on everything else.
And what do you like about customer service?
I don't know. I just really like talking to people about – I mean, I kind of joke my favorite job has been my first job. I worked at the Swift Stop, a gas station. And I don't know, just something about – dealing with customers and talking to people about stuff. And that wasn't even my own product. So it's really fun to do it out there because you can, I don't know, I mean, you could have an hour conversation with someone at your work about your product. It's kind of cool.
And do you feel like people are getting your concept of the environment that you're building?
I feel like they are. I mean, everyone that I've talked to about it has been really interested. And like I mentioned last Sunday, we had a lot of families out there, and they thought that was – pretty amazing that their kids would be able to do that. And that's what we wanted to create, an atmosphere that wasn't, I didn't want it to feel like a bar, you know. I feel like when you come out there, it's a little bit different atmosphere than some breweries. It's not that big of a tasting room, so it's a smaller, little quaint setting. So I feel like it caters more to that. But
it's a real nice space, and you know, 20 years from now, it's going to be a whole different space because Ames is expanding in that direction. So,
yeah.
You know, the long-term goals of, you know, you're in a neat place, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the county, but we're as close to the city as you can be. I mean, it seems like it's a long ways out there. I mean, it takes 10 minutes to drive out there, half an hour to bike. But if you're in a big city, a 10-minute drive is like half a mile or something. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Elliot, for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we'll see how this develops over time.
Yeah. Stop out sometime.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So we've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and where we've been exploring some people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And we want to thank our guests today, Deb Sheldroth, Director of Story County Community Services, and Kathy Johnson, who's Story County Mental Health Services Coordinator, Marlene Ayersman from the Iowa Wildlife Center, Andy McCormick from Torrent Brewing, and Elliot Thompson from Alluvial Brewing. Thanks also to Greta Anderson for contributing as a contributing reporter today.
You will find links to the to follow up on anything on this show later today, as well as be able to listen online at khoyfm.org. It's on our homepage. That's khoyfm.org. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. And, of course, you're always welcome to drop in at our studios at downtown Ames. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can listen to this show and all our past local talk shows online at khoifm.org. Your participation as the audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible, as always. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.